手紧紧贴在胸前。
Yes, this is Absolutely Intercultural, and this is show number 64. My name's Anne Fox, and the show is coming to you this time from Denmark. With the Olympics in full swing, it seems obvious to turn our attention to China this time round. However, if you think that we're going to be talking about heights, lengths, points, timings and goals, then you've come to the wrong place. But maybe by now you have an idea what the intro music was. It didn't sound stereotypically Chinese, but this is the official song for the Beijing Olympics. Today we'll be hearing from Ken Carroll, a Dubliner who has lived in Shanghai for 15 years and who offers online language training through Chinese Pod, French Pod and Spanish Pod. What does he think is the significance of China hosting the Games? Inevitably, we started talking about learning the Chinese language too.
Tea, for example, in English, is actually is from a Chinese that was pronounced de.
We'll also be hearing from Yadong Chen, a professor of English at Kwangsi University in Lutsu, and one of his students, Justina, who's currently working as an intern, about whether they'll be watching the games or not.
For me, I'm on holiday, so I can watch 10 hours a day.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of time.
Let's go absolutely yours and catch up on the people who've been in contact with us recently. Firstly, hello to Zori Ovislieva in Turkmenistan, who administers the American Peace Corps program there. I was so interested in Zori's work that I arranged to link up with her for a future show, so watch out for that. Then we heard from Christopher Cummings, who wanted to tell us about his Spanish language learning site at SpanishDict.com, and who also told us that some of our pieces resonated with him as an Asian American. I hope that we can get Christopher to tell us more about his approach to language learning in a future show. And hello also to Eddie van Hemelrijk in Belgium, who was interested in getting his students involved in producing some material for the podcast. Yes, of course, we're very open to suggestions like that, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing what they come up with. So if you have a comment, a request or a suggestion, then do go along to our blog at www.absolutely-intercultural.com and add a comment or write to us at contact@absolutely-intercultural.com. Time now to go absolutely Olympic. What are the intercultural aspects of the Olympic Games? The list is long and could begin with the opening ceremony, which was a lesson in world geography, with the majority of the world's countries represented, even those currently in conflict, such as Afghanistan and Georgia, as well as many small nations, such as Andorra and Cape Verde. Be honest, how many flags did you recognise? I was also struck by the number of parading athletes using their mobile phones, mostly to take pictures and videos, but also in conversation sometimes. The formality of the occasion has obviously been very much reduced. I can feel a theme for a future show coming on. As the games swung into action, inevitably another issue raised its head, that of cheating. What is cheating? I'm not referring here to using drugs to enhance performance, but of the strange story of the Danish sailors. The weather conditions for the start of the race were very rough, and the mast of the Danish boat broke. Instead of bowing out of the race, the Danes asked the Croatians, who were no longer competing, if they could borrow their boat. The Croatians said yes. The Danes set off late, and incredibly went on to win the competition on aggregate and were in line for the gold medal. But it took 18 hours for the judges to decide whether the Danes had broken any rules by borrowing the Croatian boat. In the end, the Danes were awarded the medal, but other nations have put in official complaints. So, was that cheating? Let us know what you think. Our first stop today is Shanghai and Ken Carroll. Now, what qualifies him to comment on the significance of the games for the Chinese?
I've been here for 14 years, actually. I guess I'm pretty much acculturated in that sense. I would say sort of part of the culture. I think of it as home. And so perhaps have a slightly interesting view, I hope, a slightly different view perhaps than maybe Chinese people, as someone who's lived here a long time but not a local. So, yeah.
I think that it's quite obvious why the Chinese government is happy to be able to host the Olympic Games. How about the Chinese people themselves?
I think it kind of depends to a certain extent. In Beijing, for example, clearly the Olympics has affected essentially everyone in the city. You know, no matter where you live in Beijing, you will see it, you'll be affected by it. Even, you know, traffic will be changed and all of those things. So I think there's a very direct impact on the lives of Beijing people. But I think beyond that, across China, slightly less so, people are interested in it, but let's say vaguely interested generally. But the thing about China is it's not a sports-obsessed kind of country. It's not like, let's say, Australia or perhaps Britain to some extent. So traditionally, sports hasn't had the sort of role that it might have had in other cultures. A lot of that, I think, has to do with the education, of course, because you may know about Chinese culture that, you know, in high school, the kids get so much homework that it's pretty staggering the amount of homework they do. And I think in the Confucian tradition, that, you know, studying in grades and all of this is phenomenally important in Chinese culture. And I think consequently, parents, your sort of average Chinese parents would be, I think, slightly less concerned about sports, less, of course, they'd like the kids to do a certain amount of sports on the weekend. So I guess I would characterize China as not necessarily a very sporting, certainly not a sports obsessed culture. So in that sense, sports is perhaps not, you know, not such a big thing. However, the Olympics, of course, is perhaps a different matter. When I speak to local friends here, people are saying, of course, they will watch the Olympics. They'll watch every part of it. I don't think they're necessarily that interested in the sports per se, because for whatever reason. But I think that clearly this is China's coming of age. China is entering the world stage as a global player. And I think, again, traditionally in Chinese society, China has been a sort of a significant sort of global power for thousands of years, and perhaps in recent times slightly less so. So I think for Chinese people, the idea is, you know, they do feel proud that that China is once again reestablishing itself as a sort of a global power, and the fact that they can host the Olympics is, I think, is a symbol of that. So I think it's more from that perspective that people are interested and will watch the Olympics rather than, let's say, the sports per se.
Do you think that there's going to be any sort of lasting effect from the Olympic Games once they're over? Or is China such a big country with so many things going on that it's just one more event?
I think there are a number of very large events, you know, on the horizon. I think, you know, everything, you know, from China's entry into the WTO a few years ago. In 2010, Shanghai will host the World Expo. Anyway, there are a number of things that that sort of bespeak China's new role in the world. But I think the Olympics is possibly the most significant, certainly at the level of news and worldwide news. So I think it will have a learning effect. We're seeing an increased interest in learning Mandarin, for sure, as we get closer to the Olympics. But my view is that actually the real effect that will come after the Olympics, I think once the profile of China has been raised through this, all of this exposure, I think there will be more and more interest in the language. So, yeah, I think there will be, I believe there will be a longer-term effect. And I think it will be fairly significant effect on China and how China is perceived in the world.
We'll be hearing more from Ken later. I also wanted to speak with some native Chinese about their perspective. I spoke with Chen Zhaodong, a teacher of English at Huangxi University in Luizhou, and one of his students, Justina.
I'm a student. I'm a junior now.
And what are you studying?
English, my major.
And what do you hope to do with your qualification?
Well, I don't know, maybe an interpreter, I think. That's what I want to be in the future.
Do you do any sport yourself?
Of course, you know, I will do some running. And then also aerobics.
One sport that we associate China with is Tai Chi. But unfortunately, when I was in China, I never got up early enough to see people doing Tai Chi. So I still don't know if Tai Chi is very popular in China, is it?
Well, actually, you know, Tai Chi is very popular for the people who was in the 50 to 60. So, you know, in the morning, in the morning, in the parks, you know, you can see everywhere a lot of people, the elderly, you know, the elderly, they always do Tai Chi.
So it's an old person.
I think maybe for our students, college students, well, we young people don't like it. I don't know why, we just don't like it. Maybe that's, we regard it as elderly people's sports, I think.
Tai Chi is for elderly people because it's very slow. Young people like sports, fast sport, not slow
like action,
sport, right?
Okay. Yep.
Yeah, my mother-in-law does it sometimes in the park.
Which of the Olympic sports will the Chinese people be most interested in seeing?
Well, I think it might be jumping, Liu Xiang's item, I think.
High jump.
Yep.
I saw on the news the sales of the tickets. That was quite spectacular. I don't think there are any tickets left, are there?
All tickets were sold out.
This means that there is a lot of interest in the Olympic Games in China. Is that right?
People have been looking forward to watch the Olympic Games, you know.
And will you be watching the Olympic Games on the television, I presume?
Yep, I think so,
TV,
if I have time.
So you don't think, you think it will be difficult to find the time?
Yeah, because, you know, I'm taking my internship in the company.
Ah, okay.
So, you know, I get a responsibility to my job. Mm. That's our Chinese people's motto.
And so will the events be happening during the daytime for you in China, or will they also be happening in the evening?
I think it will be in daytime.
Okay, so just when you're working.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, in daytime, mostly in daytime. For me, I'm on holiday. So I can watch 10 hours a day.
Yeah, Dan has a lot of time. I know that. Dan has a lot of time.
You're doing an internship. What sort of company are you doing an internship?
Well, it's a mechanical company.
Automobile, I think.
Machinery, actually. Machinery, mechanical.
Are you using your English skills there?
Yep, of course, you know, because I'm the translator of a foreign CEO there, so... My job was to translate for him all the day long.
What do you translate? Letters, emails, that sort of thing? Or is it manuals?
Well, sometimes I need to do some paper translation and also we'll do some written documents translation.
What does it mean to China as a country to have the Olympic Games?
Of course, it's
a
vital
important.
Very
good question,
It means for us to show our motherland or our spirit to the world, you know.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that we ought to know more about China and the rest of the world?
Yeah, I think so, of course. And actually, I know now a lot of foreigners, they are trying to learn Chinese. And I think the reasons they want to learn Chinese, that's because they want to know more about the culture, the way we people live and our lifestyle, our mode of thinking. And also, I think maybe some culture like Taoism and Confucianism, I think that kind of culture.
Okay, so the philosophy as well as the trade and economics.
So maybe it's a really, really a good chance for the other foreigners to come to China during Olympic Games time. And then they would know more about China. And then they can introduce China to the other people in their country.
What difference, if any, do you think the Olympic Games will make to the future of China?
It will make some differences. Actually, you know, in China, we have changed a lot and we have improved a lot. But the other people, they couldn't see that.
Mm.
And then they just still see China is the time of Chairman Mao.
Mm.
So I think it's really a good chance for China to host these Olympic Games. This will change the other people's idea, I mean the other people in other countries' idea about China.
I agree. Yeah,
I hope you could hear that a recurring theme seems to be homework in China. This reminded me of an interesting initiative happening in the USA at the moment called 2 Million Minutes. There's a great deal of concern at the moment in the USA about the effects of globalization and the dangers of the US falling behind its competitors. And people are finding ever more attention-grabbing ways of trying to get the US, and Europe for that matter, to wake up to the situation. So what is the significance of exactly 2 million minutes? Well, that's the amount of time available to the typical teenager to qualify themselves for university in high school. The project is making a series of films documenting how teenagers in India, China, and the USA are spending their time during this critical period, and it'll be no surprise to learn that the Chinese students spend a great deal of time doing homework compared to the Americans. Although you need to buy the main film, there are many short clips available for free on the project website. One of them features Bob Compton, the executive producer, giving his answer to a typical question about how students feel in China when they get low marks.
The difference in India and China is the achievement gaps are not believed to be permanent, and they are very much they believe to be within their own control. What's interesting in India and China, if you don't understand a subject or if you get a poor grade in a class, it's not because, oh, I'm just not very good at math. It's because I didn't work hard enough. They actually don't set limits for them. They don't believe they are good in certain subjects and not good in other subjects. And so there's this constant striving to improve.
Perhaps this explains why Ken Carroll thinks that anyone can learn at least a bit of Mandarin.
It's fair to say that the Chinese have been pretty much English obsessed for some decades, actually. Unfortunately, I think the methods that were used to teach English in the past were not terribly successful. They were very much grammar translation methodologies where, a lot of focus on grammar in particular and very little focus, let's say, on communication. I think the problem was that there were no teachers, for example, Chinese teachers as such, who had the experience of teaching a communicative type of English, or even teachers for that matter who actually spoke English with any real degree of fluency. But I would imagine that, in general on the streets of Beijing, no, your average person probably would not be able to communicate in any real sense in English.
Mm. In fact, we found that the people who spoke the best English were the people in the shops because they had an interest in being able to communicate with the foreign customers.
Well, I think that doesn't that really say a lot about it? Because they had a need and they had the opportunity to actually connect and to communicate and to actually use English for what it really is, which is a tool.
Mm.
And I think that bespeaks the whole thing. If you contrast that, of course, with the school where English is seen as just something you study in order to pass a test rather than as a tool in of itself. And I think that is very, very revealing of what works and what doesn't work in terms of learning English.
Well, I must say from my experience of going to Beijing, I went with my husband and two young children. And I didn't learn any Chinese before I went. And my most precious piece of paper was a little piece of paper which had, please take me to the Continental Inter Hotel or whatever it was called in Chinese script and English script. And I made sure that wherever I went, I had that on me because otherwise...
Let me tell you. Let me tell you there are people that I've known here have been here for years. Chinese is not an easy language to learn, and I know people who've been here for years. And it's interesting that I've spoken to some of them who they tend to go to the same restaurants all the time. And it dawned on me one day that's one group in particular that I knew. They were always going to this restaurant for years and years, and it turned out that the reason why is that they had the name cards, and they just found it was easy to show the name cards to the taxi drivers and get them to it. So they were kind of being limited by the places, the addresses they had, a little bit like your own story that way.
And it is a very different experience to go to a country where you cannot recognize anything at all when people are trying to communicate with you.
Exactly. If you are, as an English native speaker, you could pretty much go anywhere in Europe. And there are, of course, cognates, words that are similar. In English and German, you have house and mouse and man and all of these kind of words. And in English and French, there's plenty of cognates. English has borrowed thousands of words from the various European languages. And there are other clues, I think, cultural clues, but certainly plenty of linguistic clues that you could figure out the meanings of words, and you could guess from context. None of that really applies in the case of Chinese. There may be one or two words that are similar, but you'd never guess them from context. I'll give you an example. I mean, the word tea, for example, in English is actually it's from a Chinese word. It's actually from a dialect called Fujian dialect that was pronounced de, and that it was the first British travelers to China who landed off the coast of Fujian and saw this drink. They adopted that. There are a couple of other words like typhoon, which in Chinese taifeng. Again, these are not so much cognates as transliterations. I can't imagine that you hearing those in context that you'd actually be able to guess what they mean. So I think you're pretty much 0%. There's really no way you can guess, I guess, from the sounds. Yeah.
So do you think that people who attend the Olympic Games should be learning some Chinese, maybe some basic phrases?
Well, I wouldn't say that your the success of your trip will depend on it. No, these visitors will obviously be staying in hotels, and they'll be doing tourist things, and they'll be in places where there'll be lots of information and guidance. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. But if you want to go beyond that, and you could visit the Great Wall, and you could visit the Terracotta Army and all of these places without learning a word. But I think both you and I know, Anne, that if you can go a little bit beyond that, that the experience of visiting China can be a much broader, much deeper experience, and much more interesting in some way. So a smattering of Chinese is definitely a good thing if you can do it. And if you can speak a little more to an elementary level, I think it will open the door culturally to all sorts of experiences that may not otherwise be available to you. I also think that the buzz that you can get from actually even having a rudimentary conversation in Chinese, I found personally from my earliest days here, that it was a tremendous buzz to be able to do it. And I know I've seen other visitors in the same situation, that this ability to connect in Chinese, even on a very basic level, can be a very, very rewarding thing. And it can be also very insightful. The success of your trip to China wouldn't really depend on it. You can do perfectly well without it. But I would say it can add a tremendous level of experience to your trip if you can learn even a smattering of the language.
What, more intercultural aspects of the Olympic Games? Well, how about, is it about individuals and teams or about countries? I know many people are simply looking at the medal tally for each country, but in the Olympic Charter it does explicitly say, and I quote, "The Olympic Games are competitions between athletes in individual or team events and not between countries," unquote. Finally, isn't there a tension between the supposed coming together of nations and the inherent rivalry in sporting events? I heard one athlete interviewed who said, "I didn't come here to socialise with the other athletes." And in fact, there doesn't seem to be anything in the Olympic Charter compelling him to do so. Well, that's it for today. Thank you to everyone who took part. We couldn't do this without you. The next show will be coming to you from Germany on the 5th of September and will be brought to you by Laurent Borgmann. Stay tuned.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig interkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.